How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow?
Again.
How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow? The big-footed Copernicus moved over the threaded hill. I look good. I look really good. Hey, everyone, come see how good I look. Okay. All right.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me, LaPhil.
Who are you? What do you do?
I'm a simple boy from Moonee Ponds. My name's Andrew Morella. I was the winner of the first Australian Apprentice, head of business development at the Entourage, and all-around good guy, and also philanthropist as well.
You missed one thing, though.
What did I miss?
Party animal, too.
Very good. Very good, yes. I do enjoy life quite a lot. We've known each other for a long time now, so this is a great honour and a privilege to be on this with you. Because where all the bodies are buried. You know where all the skeletons are.
I'm trying to end up there myself. Tell me, so you've gotten to this part of your life and you've been on The Apprentice. I remember when you were an apprentice and I was like, fucking there he is. Metro Nightclub.
I know.
Andrew Morello. And then there you are. You've won it and poof. Your life's elevated. So tell us about the journey of getting to that stage and then maybe we'll continue on after that. But
yeah, so I think it's interesting.
How old were you?
Yeah, I was 23/24 when I won it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it changed my life completely because I ended up moving to Sydney, right? So, we obviously, for those who don't know, we've known each other for 20 years from Metro underage days. To then, Chasers and Zoss and...
Just to scare you even more, that's 24 years ago.
Oh, no, don't do... Well, it's my 20-year school reunion tonight.
Yeah,
that's what I'm in Melbourne for, back in my mum and dad's house, back in Moonee Ponds. So it's interesting. A lot of people ask Mark Burris whenever, he and I speak at a function, they'll say, oh, what do you reckon? Do you reckon Morello wouldn't have achieved what he has achieved if it wasn't for The Apprentice or wasn't for you? And Mark always puts it eloquently. He says, Morello would have still achieved what he's achieved. It probably just would have taken a bit longer, right? So I think it was a really good platform for me and a really good culmination of, let's call it, the first quarter of my life. Up to that point, as I used to run, underage dance parties, and I ran some overage dance parties, and I was in the real estate world. So I feel like I'd taken a little bit of everywhere, little bits of knowledge. And I think going on The Apprentice was great because it was an opportunity to use all of those skill sets, life, psychological, mental, emotional, and use all those experiences to obviously go on and win it. But I it wasn't a plan. People always going, what was your strategy to win? And I said, I think, and I would hope you would agree with this, knowing me for 24 years, that I'm unapologetically me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, or ugly. I was talking to an ex-girlfriend the other week, and we're still really good friends. And she was just telling me about some of the issues that she's having with her new partner. And she brought up something about me, she's like, oh, you're still going out with your cousin and partying and all that. And I said, yeah, I am. I said, let me ask you a question. When we first started dating, you fell in love with me, to when we still loved each other, but we weren't in love anymore. Did I ever change? I said, Section 52 of the Fair Traders Act, misleading and deceptive conduct. I said, did I ever mislead or deceive you? And she's like, no, you didn't. I said, so the reality is that for good or for bad, one of the guys in the office always says to me, you're constant. You're a constant, right? Now, people got to make that decision. Then do they enjoy that? And do they want to be a part of that Morello experience? Or is it too much for them, right?
Yeah.
And look, at the end of the day, you can't, you can't make people want to be a part of that journey. And what's suitable for them in that part of their life may not be suitable for them later on.
Mm.
And that's just the reality. So, yeah.
And, let's wrap it up.
We got plenty more to do, Phil.
So you've pulled in all these skills, whether it's your social skills, what you learn from all these different avenues into The Apprentice. And The Apprentice has given you this platform.
Yep.
So where did you go from there? Like, and mind you, how was it feeling? What was the feeling like winning the Apprentice?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting.
You remember?
I do. I remember it perfectly, right? So it's actually funny because, and I'm going to ruin it for a few people, and I don't always tell this story, but they in most reality TV shows, the only thing that's fake is they film multiple endings. So I've got two mates on MasterChef right now, and they filmed two endings in MasterChef.
Canceled,
yeah, well, so it's what they do. So I didn't actually know I won. Like, I came back and I was, you know, partying with you boys and having a good time, and everyone's like, oh, how'd you go? And I genuinely didn't. They thought I was not telling them that. Okay, they're like, okay. Well, you know if you won or not. I see, actually, because we weren't allowed to say anything, but I was like, I actually don't know, and I didn't know until literally the night before.
Yeah, right.
So the night before, because you came down...
Before the airing.
Because you came down to the Fringe Bar. Yeah. So every week, obviously, I was running a little charity event each week and bringing the contestants that had, you know, got fired each week to be interviewed by me and raise money for charity, and we auctioned off little knickknacks and art and things like that. Yep. So the last night of the finale, there was 400 people at Fringe Bar, and that Dave Stewart was the one of the owners from Ascot Foods. Yeah. So he was one of the owners of Fringe Bar with Cam, and they put on this massive party and 400 people, and I had to fly to Sydney. So Mark Burris rings me and he's like, he was supposed to ring me at like 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. It was going to be aired at a 2-hour special on the Monday night, and he rings me and I didn't get the call. So 1 o'clock came, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4. So I assumed that I didn't get it.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd just text the Karen, who's the executive producer for Fremantle at the time. And I texted and I said, should I have received the call by now? And she's like, yeah, well, he hasn't called you. And she's like, leave it with me. And then he calls me and he goes, Morello. And I said, yes, Mr. Burris. He goes, it's Mark now, mate. I said, why? He goes, because you've won. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. I said, were you supposed to ring me at 1 o'clock? It's 8 o'clock now. He goes, don't hate me, but I forgot. So, yeah, it was good. And then I ended up having, he goes, you got to jump on a plane and come to Sydney because Tuesday morning you've got interviews at 7 a.m. on the Today Show and channels. And the Today Show, what did we do? We did Today Show. We did Daily Mail. We did a few other interviews and stuff. And he goes, and then, you know.
Did that life, was it daunting? Going into that kind of spotlight for that period of time?
It was daunting, the most daunting part, so I felt the show was fine. Mm. The daunting part was actually moving to Sydney.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Obviously, you stayed with me heaps and it was fun. Like, I lived on the beachfront and we had lots of fun playing chess, drinking whiskey. So it was a good life, and I bought a place right on the beachfront, so I had a great lifestyle. But, you know, like, we're in my mum and dad's family home today, right? Like, they've been here since 1972. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mum passed away in this home, and there's photos of all my family. There's me as a baby behind me there. And so, like, I'd been a bit of a mama's boy. So, like, moving to a whole other city was quite a daunting thing. My sister lived in Europe for 13 years, so she sort of blazed the way for me. But I think the daunting part was once it was all done and dusted. While it was happening, I actually genuinely, not that I didn't think I had the capability of winning it, I genuinely thought I'd come, like, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, leverage the hell out of it, sell lots of real estate off the back of it, be a superstar in real estate. It was funny because when Bruce rings me and he goes, oh, when can you come to Sydney? I'm like, mate, I've listed 40 auctions, literally. So I said, you're going to need to give me a couple of months before I actually officially move.
Yeah.
And then he was still disorganized. I got to Sydney and they put me in the Marriott. And like, people would be like, where are you living? And I'm like, I'd be at the Ivy Pool parties. And people would be like, where do you live? I'm like, in the Marriott? And they're like, what, the hotel? I'm like, yeah. And then I think he forgot that he put me in the Marriott until somebody complained about the fact it was $600 a night. And then he moved me into, he's got a hotel called Morgan's in the Cross. And so he moved me into that. There he put me in like the penthouse there, which was nice. It's like a little cute sort of boutique hotel. And then Bondi, which you've stayed at plenty of times and had lots of fun.
Just down the road from Mark Clark.
Yes, correct. I was there when the ring got flown.
Yeah. I can see it.
So, a bit of fun.
Rollerblades or roller skates?
Rollerblades, but I love roller skates. But I would be rollerblades. I used to be in rollerblades. There was a little shop here in Putney Street growing up. They used to do it.
Back to the Future or Ghostbusters?
Back to the Future, for sure.
Yeah, the DeLorean.
Yeah, the DeLorean, correct.
Which one, the 1, 2, or 3?
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah?
Probably 3. I love 3. 3 was great. Do you know actually what I got for Father's Day? Keneal and Lion got me the Lego set of the DeLorean.
Get out.
Yeah, awesome. So I'm building it in my mate's factory right now. So my mate's...
Wait, what size is it?
So the DeLorean's, the Lego one's this big, but my mate actually owns
DeLorean.
He owns an actual DeLorean, awesome. Dr. Jordan Nguyen. So yeah. A very, very smart guy. And so we started building it, but it's 2,000 pieces and it's a journey.
And
so
we're halfway through.
There was a lot of whiskey bottles. I still remember we got about 8-9 hours in and we looked at each other. The sun was starting to come up and I was like, bro, I think I need to go home. And he's like, but we're only halfway through. I'm like, I know, yeah, I can't finish it.
Definitely the vortex.
Oh no, it was definitely a vortex. So definitely.
So obviously having the kicks of the gut, as yes. I say. Let's rewind a bit. Do you remember what was the first thing you ever flogged off? Was it, were you selling stamps up in front of the home? Was there a lemon stand?
I was at my dad's servo, right? So, you know, like growing up, I grew up, you know, there's a great line in The Apprentice where Mark Burris turns around and he goes, I said, oh, you know, he goes, what do you think you should win? I think we're the last three at this point. And we all had to say something. And the other two people I was up against, one had an MBA, one had a law degree. And I said, look, I don't have a law degree. I wrote a best-selling book in real estate and I can barely spell, right? So I barely finished high school. It's ironic that I'm, you know, going and speaking at my high school reunion tonight. That's the irony of it.
They did.
I wrote a post the other day that it said, did you see the post? Yeah, as I was flying into Melbourne. Yeah. 11 o'clock. Yes, I said, yes. They said I'd be dead or in jail. Yeah, and now I'm at the 20-year reunion. So there we go. Not dead or in jail. So there we go. Burris turns around and he goes, Morello, you've got a degree. And I'm like, no, I don't. And he said, you've got a bachelor in business. And I said, no, I don't. He goes, you've got a doctorate. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, from the back streets of Moonee Ponds. And it was like, I grew up on the corner of Pascavel Road and Buckley Street, Moonee Ponds, pumping petrol at my dad's servo. And I think a lot of those business skills, you know, it was like doing an MBA. It was like doing a, you know,
a psychology degree.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, growing up 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, pumping petrol, cleaning toilets, stocking shelves. You learned the skills of selling. You learned the skills of relationship building. You know, like, it was a colourful place to grow up in, the service station. You know, my uncle was a big swearer back in the day. And like, I still remember, I'm old enough to remember, Michael Bill would smoke cigarettes behind the cash register. You were allowed to do that back then, you know? And you just
smoke at the pumps.
Or you could smoke at the pumps, correct. Now I'm starting to feel a bit old. But yeah, so I think that's my earliest memory of, you know, hustling and being in business.
It was, and grinding.
And grinding.
Yeah, of course.
You know, my dad did that 6-7 days a week for 50 years. It's a long time. It's a long time. But it's good because it taught me good work ethic. It also taught me what I don't want to do as well. Like, I think that was a big propellant for me, that I was like, okay, I've got to be smarter at business because...
You'll end up in a factory or you'll end up somewhere.
And I also, like, mum and dad obviously were successful, but I... you know, they did it the hard way. They dredged through it, you know, and, you know, you got to spend some time with my dad before, and, you know, he's alone now. Like, you know, he spent 50 years working and then he retired and his wife passed away. So I think that's taught me that, to put it all into perspective, number one. Number two, yeah, you know, probably some people might say I enjoy a little bit of life too much. And I'm like, well, do I? Like, at least if, like, you know, God forbid, touch wood, God forbid if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I wouldn't be laying there going, like, sad about the life I've lived. I said, well, you know, I gave it a solid nudge. I've done the Burning Man, I've done Coachella, I've gone and done the...
We hung out,
we went to Cambodia together, went, you know, did Mount Kinabalu in Borneo, summited that, did the Kokoda Trail. So it's like, okay, you know, I probably enjoyed sometimes the fruits of life a little bit too much, but then I look down and go, okay, well...
what's too much?
That's my point.
You keep saying to me, oh, well, have you stopped doing what you're doing?
I know, correct.
Sometimes you could have a break. It's cyclical.
As we drink a whiskey.
Yeah.
By the way, to the people watching, we were going to drink a whiskey, and then I thought, we should have a whiskey.
Cheers.
You still playing chess?
Yeah. Still give it a go. I play with this guy, Maxim, this Ukrainian guy. We catch up at Chapel Street with Husk, and he's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Gives me a good nudge, so... We had a game that went for about an hour and a half, and I was like, I've got to go. But I went for the, you know, I went all in, and I was about two steps behind him, so
yeah.
he was pretty good. But Dad doesn't play me, because I beat him.
I know.
Yeah, I beat him. Since then, he's said, fuck you, I'm not playing.
That's it. It was a passing of the... passing of the torch. Yeah, 100%. That's what it is. Yeah, because he taught you. He was a grandmaster.
No, his brother.
His brother. That's right. I remember you telling me. Yeah.
So my
you never let me win ever.
Let you? I did let you
once. You let me win once. Correct. I remember.
No, you beat me. You beat me. Fair and square. The alcohol beat me too.
What?
The alcohol beat me too. What?
Correct. Yeah.
So now that your time spent has been in Sydney.
It has. Yep.
And I don't know. Like, what's the difference between Sydney and Melbourne? Like, what has?
You know what? It's this. Everyone always asks this, right? And I'm going to give a very
for you though. For
yeah,
you,
but I'm going to give a very crude answer. But it's the truth. Yeah. It's just a reality. So I warn everyone for the crude answer. I always say to people, Melbourne is your wife,
yep,
and Sydney is your mistress.
Okay.
It's that's the best way to describe the cities, right? Like,
and what kind of hotel would you put the mistress into?
Crown Barangaroo now, that's right. There we go.
She's not an F1.
So look, I think Sydney's been great, and look, now it's funny because Melbourne always still feels like home. Like, you know, even when I come back to my family home here and you know, when I was living in my other place, she used to come around there. So like Moonee Pond still does feel like home, right? So that's why that's your wife. It feels like a staple, sort of a very comfortable thing. Sydney, it's crazy, bro. Like, I've got mates that are up there now from Melbourne, and I've organized it for them to go to Shoe Studio, the nightclub that Julian Tobias owns in the Cross, and they're going there tomorrow night, and Julian's looking after him. And they've obviously got in a booth and all that. And they're like, they texted me like, bro, these prices in Sydney are crazy. I'm like, oh, bro, that's everything in Sydney.
Yeah, right.
Like, you can't leave your house.
It's the groves of people leaving.
Correct. The cost of living is exorbitant, right? Yeah, and it's interesting. So like Keneal and I like to take Lion on little adventures. We took him to the Blue Mountains. We take him to a farm out in, you know, the Hills District, so he can paddle the animals and stuff. And the tolls, just to go from where we live, Rose Bay, to, let's call it the Hills District, or let's call it, you know, to go to Blue Mountains and back, if you're going to do a day trip, the tolls alone are like $80-$90.
Jesus.
Right? So it's like, so I look at that and I go, okay, Sydney's great for, like, it's fun, it's fast paced, it's got the harbour. Correct. Right? But, like, you know, and it's interesting because now, obviously, you know, I've got a son now, and, you know, Lion, Maine, Morello, and he's 2.5, so now we're starting to have that conversation. Like, is he going to go to school in Melbourne? Is he going to go to school in Sydney? Sydney, we back onto a school called Cranbrook. You know, year 12's like 60 grand a year now.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy.
Well, we'll pay like 4 grand.
Correct. St. Bernard's was like 5 grand. Correct. Correct. But it was a great school, like, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, and that's the other thing. Like, my brother was school captain, I was vice captain.
You were vice captain?
Yeah.
Fucking,
I know.
Talk some shit.
How did they let me do that? They didn't want to.
Did you do
your 12? I did. I didn't really. I didn't do it.
School for me was
very much a social thing.
Yeah, same here. But you didn't
have
a wag, did you?
No, we didn't need to. St. Bernard's had a pretty good culture where it was like, look, you know, tonight, there's a lot of boys going tonight, yeah, right? Which is great, right? So, and that's why...
Trying to sell it to me.
I know, there we go. You want to come to the St. Bernard's for the reunion? So there's a lot of guys going tonight, and I think that is testament, and like, we're having it at the Escobar Hotel, which is owned by 2 St. Bernard's boys.
Yeah, right, okay.
And to give you an idea, I was at Hemisphere on top of the establishment a couple of weeks ago. And I saw a girl that I know, and she came over, a girl that used to host me at the Crown Casino back in the day. And she's still at Crown. She come over, she's like, Morello. I'm like, hey, yo, rada, long time no see. Having a bit of a kiss, hello, what's going on? And then I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm just out with my 2 friends from Melbourne. I said, oh, yeah, because she used to work at Crown Melbourne. And I said, oh, no way. And I go over to meet him, shake the hand. They look at me and they go, are you Morello? And I'm like, yeah, I am. They're like, Were you? They thought I was school captain. They go, were you school captain in like 2000, early 2000s? I'm like, no, I was vice captain in 2003. Yeah, and they're like, we're St. Bernard's boys. And all of a sudden, I don't know these guys from a bar of soap. We start the school song, Razza, Razza.
Yeah,
in the middle of the hemisphere, we're screaming at the top of our lungs.
The camaraderie is there.
You know, so
and that's definitely resonated now in your latter years after school.
100%.
You know, with people that you meet. You stick together and you build your crew around.
Well, I'm a big believer that the meaning to life is the people we meet and what we create with them, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I look at even, like, our friendship and our relationship, like, you know, we don't see each other all the time, but we pick up always right where we left off.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you look...
It's the standard questions we always ask.
Oh, no.
And we don't really listen to each other.
Well, you know you got married.
Yeah.
Bro, you threw that one at me. I thought you were joking when you said to me, like, oh, I just got married again. And I'm like, did ya?
Yeah, you got to try it once.
This is your second one. You didn't learn your lesson, did you? No, Jake, I'm sure she's... I'm looking forward to meeting her and having a dinner with her one night. So she... But, you know, like, I look at that and I say, well, the meaning to life is the people we meet and what we create with them. You came to Cambodia with us and worked with kids. Like, you know, like, I look at that journey that we've gone on, and I try and have that with as many people as possible, like a life-changing experience.
Yeah,
it's something that we can all hang out of.
And I think one thing I always say nowadays, especially in the last kind of 5 years, with my own life changing, is that you know, time is too precious now. Mm. I'm turning fucking 40 in 2 weeks.
Time. Wow.
And time is precious.
Mm.
You know, look at your dad, look at my dad. Mm. And, you know, you're like, my dad, for example, wants to squeeze in everything when I get there in 2 hours.
Mm.
I've got to get a Bunnings with him. I've got to cut wood with him. Right. I've got to take photos for him. I've got to, you know, I've got to talk to him. I've got to have an article with him. Everything in 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's it all in. And as I'm getting older, do you feel that, you know, time... Like, I don't want to waste time.
Mm.
I don't want to be doing fucking shit that doesn't... That doesn't serve me, so I can't make those experiences.
So it's funny. I heard that song, "The Cat's in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon." You know, that's all about the dad not having time for the son.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I look at it now. I flew in the other night, and my dad's like, "Oh, do you want to go for dinner?" I'm like, "No, I got a dinner appointment." Then he's like, "Do you want to go for lunch?" And I'm like, "Oh no, I've got to do Zooms." Like. And you realize that we're going, like, you know, we're turning into our dad sometimes. Like, we get busy, right? I think the beauty for you and your dad, and I love that catalog you brought as well from your event last year, is that you're both creative, right? So there's a real beauty in that. Like, my dad and I, like, I suppose we're both businessy. So he'll often, you know, the first thing he'll do is, like, how's business? What's going on in the market? Tell me about, you know, how things are going. But, you know, I've tried to make more of a conscious effort. Like, even sometimes when I get booked to speak at gigs in Melbourne, they'll often say, oh, we'll put you up in a hotel. I say, no, I could actually rather stay with my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, sometimes the only time I get to sit down and relax with him, so I might have a whiskey with him at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, you know, while he's watching one of his television shows.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's have a whiskey together and have a bit of a chat, you know. Let's turn the TV on silent and have a bit of a chat. And we do. And I actually think, ironically, on that, I think my dad and I, so when my mum was around, I was definitely a mama's boy, and I think my dad was very much my dad. I think since my mum passed away, we've become mates.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And I think there's a little bit of an element of, like, and now that I've become a dad as well, like, I think, like, there was a bit of a
rite of... You're starting to adult now.
Correct. There was a bit of a rite of passage around the fact that, like, you know, I'm a dad too now, right? So, like, I can probably be a bit more straightforward, a bit more... blunt with him. I don't have to sugarcoat it, and I don't hide who I am, you know. Like, you know, you still remember he'd tell me off for having a whiskey at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I did,
like,
I did the same 2 weeks about a year and a half ago. I rolled into Father's Day with a little vial, and I said, hey, I'm gonna have a rack,
straight up to your dad,
to my parents. My mum's going, give me some of that.
She's no, shut up.
Yeah, break all the fucking barriers.
Did you?
Yeah, I did it on purpose.
Just to get it all out of the open.
Well, they always knew.
Shit, that's the best!
And Dad looked at me and goes, what the fuck's happening? You can't see it on his face.
I'll actually tell you a quick little story. I'll leave the names out of it so yes, please top up.
As you tell.
So, a certain person, I'm sure they might end up watching this, but you know of their family if I tell you off camera later. So we go to the wedding. And the groom is marrying my mate's sister.
Okay.
And we're all at the wedding at the church. Yep, we're all at the church. And you know how, like, or, you know, Europeans, we always, like, carry cash on your wedding day so you've got to pay for things. And
of course.
Little wads of cash. Anyway, he goes, I think, to pay pay for something at the church. And he's standing at the altar. And the girl who's about to marry him, his future father-in-law, is standing there, like, it's before the wedding started, but still, there's people there.
Yeah.
And he goes to reach out, get something out of his breast pocket, and but the wad of cash or something, and the bag had just stuck to it, and three bags of cocaine fall on the floor in the
church.
In the church, and we all lost it. I was like, what? And then this girl's dad, and his soon-to-be father-in-law in 20 minutes time, just goes, mate, pick them up and put them away.
And I went,
oh, you all just cracked up laughing. And I said, oh, shit, that's the best. And I go, look, I ended up speaking to the father later on, and I said, you can't be that upset. I said, it's his wedding day. He's having a bit of fun.
Exactly.
He goes, yeah, but he should have dropped it in church.
Do you think, actually this is a great segue, do you think the taboo about drug use is slowly becoming a little bit more spoken about?
I talk to my dad about my ceremonies I go on, and my Mexican bullfrog experiences, and I talk to my dad about those now, and I talk to him about, you know, having magic mushrooms when I used to go to Thailand. Do we have mushrooms when we went to Cambodia? We had a good time. So I talked to my dad about that, and my dad watched a documentary on Burning Man the other day. So he sat me down. He's like, "Do you see what they're doing at Burning Man?" I said, "What are they doing, Dad?" He's like, "They got undercover police there now." I said, "What do you mean? Everyone's taking drugs. There would be a pointless exercise having undercover police." We're going to arrest 150,000 people. So I think, since mum passed away, I've just been able to have a much more open and transparent conversation with my father, which has been, it's a beautiful thing. And I think with this next generation, people go, what sort of a father do you want to be to Lion? I'd want my son to feel comfortable enough to have a conversation with me, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, if he gets himself in trouble, let me know. I can help him if he gets himself in trouble. If he has too much of something or he has a bad experience, I'd rather he feel comfortable enough to talk to me, right?
Of course.
I think we could have done that with the older Europeans. Probably not. I don't think we're as black and white completely with my dad. Even though I just kicked my dad out of the room just then, he thought he was coming to the reunion tonight. I said, a few of the boys are coming over for a whiskey before the reunion day. He's like, oh yeah, what time are we going? So it's not your reunion, bro. This is my reunion. So... yeah, but I'm really enjoying the relationship I have with my dad now. Yeah. It's definitely transcended father and son and become more mates. He came to Sydney for Lion's birthday, and we just sort of Lion me. Yeah, I did. We took him to a pool, took him to a bar one night here. He was like a celebrity, bro. All these girls were wanting to have photos with him. My brother's like, did you take that out?
So you were his man.
Oh, no, correct. My brother's like, did you take that out? I'm like, yeah, I did. He's like, what time did he get home? I go, I'll send him home at midnight. After midnight. I said, and he goes, was he there talking to girls? I'm like, yeah. He was married for 50 years, did the right thing. If he wants to go talk to some girls, let him bloody talk to some girls. it's good. It is good. Yeah, I've been very, very lucky. Obviously, have I seen you since mum passed away?
No.
I don't know if I have, no. So, because it all happened during COVID, right?
Before COVID.
Yeah, so it happened during COVID. A baby during COVID, yeah. So mum sadly passed away during COVID, but it was a battle with dementia and
I remember, we talked about it.
It wasn't good, she was young, but I look at that and I think that was a really good life experience for me. And interestingly, you talk about chemical induced experiences. I feel like a lot of people were like, oh, you seem to be taking it really well. And I said, well, look, I'm obviously sad that my mum's passed away, but what I did is I went away for 3 days and did a ayahuasca ceremony. And
You were
trying to get
to go.
Yeah, correct. I wanted you to come. Yeah, correct. So, but I mourned my mum
through
that experience. Yeah, right. So when she passed away, I was very much at peace. I really saw her going back to the singularity and her returning to the universe. Right, I didn't see her passing, and I feel like she's with me all the time. I see so much of her in my son. Which is a really beautiful thing. And then obviously. Excuse me, surprise baby. Mum passed away August 16 and Keneal 2020 and then Keneal Fairnature was pregnant August 19, right? So you know, it was. I feel like it wasn't directly as in like the same date,
no,
but I feel like energetically there was a bit of a passing of the
torch.
Correct, like correct.
The torch.
And Lion very much is like my mother. Like, you know, we'll pack up when we go to a restaurant in Sydney. We'll pack it all up, all the leftover food, and we'll walk to the ferry, and we'll find a homeless guy, and he's 2 years old, and he'll go up, sit down with them, give them the food. And like homeless people say to Kenil and I, oh my God, most parents make their kids cross the road when they see me sitting on the ground. I said, no, you're a human being. So like my mother was like that. You know, my mother, when the boys, when we were younger, once again, we'll leave names out, but when the boys got into trouble and their parents kicked them out of home, you know, for drug dealing. My parents, who were very anti-drugs and even alcohol, my dad moved them into here. They lived here for 3 months, right? Like they openly admitted that they were pleading guilty to criminal charges for drug dealing. My parents knew that. It was in the paper and everything. And my mum and dad took them in because that's the sort of people that I grew up with. Yeah, like, and my mum and dad, they were like, it doesn't matter what somebody's done, you should still...
But they've got room for redemption.
Correct, 100%. Yeah, and look, both of those boys, you know, one got on the rails, then fell off the rails, and now he's back on the rails, which is good.
But everyone goes through the rails. But, yeah. But more importantly, your parents... You've instilled that into your child, and I think I've just got one question, because I'm dealing with something myself about, and something that I've always dealt with is death.
Yep.
How was that whole period of your mum, and you know, how has that made you stronger?
Yep.
Since then, that's I think made you giving you more authority, I think.
Yep.
She's passed something on to you, and I can see that, and I can feel that.
Yep. I think that whole period, that whole experience really changed my relationship with death. She was definitely in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
It had gotten to the point where she didn't know who any of us were anyway. And like I've always said, like, if I get to that point, wrap me up.
Yeah.
Like, especially living the life that my mother lived, you know, she at one stage she was on the women's auxiliary board at three schools. My sisters, Ave Maria, St. Bernard's and St. Monica's, simultaneously. She did volunteer work for the council, taking Italian ladies to go fill their prescriptions and stuff like that. She worked with my dad in the service station. She drove my brother, my sister and I to soccer, football, cricket, tennis, swimming, you know, everything, you know. And I'm like, she was a queen. Like, she was a matriarchal queen, right? Yeah. So, like, I look at that and I go, when you get to that point, like, it was not good to see her get to that point. Like, I feel like nobody wants to be remembered like that. We want to remember my mum.
At their strongest.
At their strongest, correct. Yeah. Exactly. You know, like, interestingly, you know, my cousin Anthony, and so, interestingly, his dad just passed away, maybe 3, 4, 5 months ago. He'd been sick with dementia as well. So sadly, and it happened quite suddenly. Like, with my mum, it was sort of over a 6 month period of demise, but with my Uncle Bill, it was like over a 3-4 day period, right? Anyway, my Uncle Bill was a great role model for me. Like, he was a bit of a CUNT at times, and he would tell you, you're a CUNT at times. And he was very black and white with his vernacular, and very forward. But he was I used to call him as a joke, he was the draft horse, right? So he'd get into our family business, the service station. He'd be the first one in and the last one out every day. He'd literally do like 14, 15, 16, 17 hour days, right? And he was never late. He lived the furthest away in Gladstone Park into coming to Mooney Ponds, but he was always the first one in and the last one out. And he taught me really good work ethic. Like, working with my uncle taught me that. Anyway, with the Italian culture, we do the rosary the night before the funeral. And they decided to do an open casket for the rosary. And I hadn't seen my Uncle Bill for a couple of years before he passed away. It's not something I regret, but I was quite sad about that, because I did have a very good relationship with him. And he was a great man, right? And you know my cousin really well. And he was a great role model for my cousin Anthony. Anyway, they had an open casket, and it didn't look like my Uncle Bill. Like, I remember him being the pack horse. Like, he was a big guy. He used to
see,
there was presence about him, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I sort of said to my dad, like, after the rosary, I went and took my dad for dinner after it. And we went to Essendon for dinner. And we're sitting there, and I said, listen, if I get sick, touch wood, but if I get sick, I don't want people to see me like that. I want them to remember me as the big, vivacious, you know, cute, cuddly guy. Not if, you know, my Uncle Bill obviously gone gaunt.
Yeah.
So, but going back
to...
You
want to be remembered as...
I want to be remembered as this, you know, Morello, the crazy guy.
Yeah, exactly.
The party boy.
Cool, let's catch up with the weekend.
but once again, going back to work, my relationship with death definitely shifted. I've done a lot of work spiritually, mentally, emotionally, done a lot of, you know, reading a lot of, you know, books and scripture, not necessarily religious scripture, more spiritual scripture.
Such as?
I'm really big on Ramdas right now.
Okay.
Do you follow?
No.
So Ramdas was a Harvard lecturer and he was Jewish.
Yep.
And his name was Richard Alfred.
Okay.
Yeah, Richard Alfred. And then basically he started in the 70s, he started a study at Harvard using LSD.
Okay.
Right? So it was very outside the box. Obviously the you know, the hardliner Harvard people weren't really open to the idea.
At the time.
Yeah, I know now it's all come back in, correct. You know, like
my mate's
wife, her dad, he was addicted to opioids and they put him through a 2-week ketamine treatment,
yeah.
Right? And he hasn't touched an opioid since, right? Yeah. So there's obviously a lot of literature and all that about that. But anyway, I listened to, it's called Here and Now, his podcast, and he's got a book as well called Here and Now,
yep.
And it's Ramdas, Ramdass.
Yep.
And so that was his Indian name. So what he did is when he got kicked out of Harvard, and he had a little single engine Cessna, he had a, you know, Mercedes Benz, he had houses,
everything.
And he goes, I had what I thought was going to make me happy, and then when I got kicked out of Harvard, he goes, I went to India, and he goes, I found true happiness, right? So then he lived a life of, you know, simplicity
for himself.
And he became, and when you listen to some of his stuff, so he's passed away sadly. Now, one of the sad things was I found out about him just after he passed away. So I was dating Sandy. Remember when I was dating Sandy?
Yeah.
She actually got me onto him. And then she was telling me about this Ramdas. She was reading about it. I'm like, oh, this guy's a trippy. It's too much for me. And then when I actually gave it the time, energy, and effort and actually sat with it and listened to, you know, if you minus all the LSD stories, anyone listen to this, that's...
The grey area in between, what people don't listen to.
Yeah.
It's the glorification that people focus on, the LSD, let's go try this, but you've got to work out the best.
There's
a reason why...
Correct. He used that as a vehicle. Yeah, he used
that
as a vehicle to break through the constraints of the consciousness and to open up parts of his mind.
Yes.
And then he later talks about, you know, as he got older, that he didn't use any chemical enhancements anymore because he goes, I used meditation to get to those bit that.
Well, I think level of consciousness. In my opinion, my father's always said this, and my father's drug history and all, but he's always said the best things created are of a sober mind. And it's funny because my best things have never been of a sober mind.
It's when you do your best work.
But I'm starting to realize as I'm getting older that there is space for that.
Yes.
There is space for that. There is space for rationality.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, extremism is easy in your 20s whilst you're doing that.
Yeah.
So
you mature and you grow and it's the evolution. You know, we talked about it before. I didn't realize that you were turning 40. It makes me feel old that you're turning 40, actually. Like, shit, that means I'm turning 40 in a couple of years' time. So, what are you going to do? What are you doing?
That's reminding me.
I know. What are you doing? You going to do it?
No idea. Yeah.
Should we do something?
I'm going with the family.
Okay.
And then,
geez, you really have matured.
How do you
go
with the family?
Oh, that's good. But I think you know. I think we hit the nail on the head is in like a sense that like I think now like even I went and did a Vedic meditation course, which is good. Like when I go and do ceremony, like that's another misconception people have about ceremony. Like, oh, you're going off to the jungle to get off your head. I'm like, it's actually not that at all. It's not a party.
No.
Like people, like I made that mistake the first time I went. Like I thought I was.
You invited me.
I don't know. That wasn't the first one I invited you. I'd done a few after that. So, but. I remember I got invited by a particular girl and I went with her and you know, I thought I was going for like a party weekend then. You know, we're gonna you know, roll around with the grass and shit like that. When, you know, and then I got there and, you know, it really took it out of me, and it's what I needed. It was an ego death, right? That was the experience that I had, right? Like I purged, I threw up.
I think we spoke. We spoke afterwards.
But it
was. How long did the trip was? What, 8 hours?
Yeah, you know, 6 to 8 hours, and you can always, you know, the shamans are very good and the spirit helpers are in like controlling that circumstance for you. So like obviously I have brought friends over the years. Or there's a lot of people that go and do it that have never taken a drug in their life,
never
smoked weed, right? Because it is a 4,000 year old medicine. That's the reality, right? So it's like, you know, and you do, it does work. Like I basically said to someone the other week, they asked me to describe it. I said, it's basically, I work with a high performance psychologist as well. And I said, it's basically 6 months worth of psychology sessions in one weekend, right? Like you get thrown around, you do breath work, you do meditation, you do sharing circles, you do journaling. And then at night you do ceremony, right? And it's like, and that might finish up at like 4 a.m, then you go to bed and you actually feel, because you're fasting as well and you're eating just like plain vegetable soups, no salts, no, your alkaline levels are real, real simple, water only, no coffees, no teas, no caffeines. And I try.
No fun.
No, well, but the experience when you do it is worth it, right? And then I still remember, but when you finish your last day, like you just, you start coughing down everything. You're like, I need proper food. Your body's like, keep dying at that point. You're like, I need proper food. But you wouldn't want to eat too much anyway, because obviously it does, it's not everybody purges. Like once again, people read the shit online or they watch a stupid YouTube clip. And like with anything in life, right? If you treat it with disrespect, then it's going to treat you with disrespect. Correct, right? So like one of the biggest problems I got right now in New York is that these people, these kids, there's plenty of problems. But these kids, I was reading this article, kids now are getting ayahuasca and having an ayahuasca party on a Saturday night. Like, it's not a party thing, bro. One, that's disrespectful to the plant. Number two, it's disrespectful to the ceremony. Number three, it's dangerous because you're not doing it under a guided shaman. But then, it's got to take somebody to fuck up to ruin it for the rest. That's the reality.
But irrespective of little punks, I think you mentioned that experience and that ceremony and that celebration had a lot to do with your relationship with death.
Yes, massively.
And your mum. And can you sort of expand on what it is and how you see death now as opposed to what it was prior? Because I'm still shooting myself.
Mm.
I don't have, I've still got both my parents.
Yep.
And I look at my father and I see him, you know, getting older and having to deal with it. What is that? How has that changed for you? Not just through that celebration, but through the passing of your mum.
Yeah. Great question, by the way. And it was a wake up call. But as I mentioned, like my relationship with death became a much more loving relationship. Like when my mum passed, I saw her she was out of pain, right? So like, I was like, I'm happy for her. Now, does that mean I want to die? No, I do not.
No.
Does it mean if I got sick and died, would I be completely okay with it? I'd be like, I reckon I'm at the point, I'm certainly not fucking Buddha, right? But I reckon I'm maybe 80, 85% there. Like, as in like, I wouldn't be happy that, you know, I'm only, you know, late 30s. So I'd say like, there's so much more fun to have and so many more experiences. And I obviously want to see my son grow up and I'd love to, hopefully if he wants to have kids one day, I'd love to see our grandkids and stuff. But like, I look at my dad and like, you know, he had a stroke. He worked through a stroke, bro. I don't know if I told you this. So my dad had a stroke here at 4 a.m, drove to work. Didn't think the fact that he couldn't use press on the accelerator properly, that there was an actual problem. He was throwing up all morning. My dad doesn't drink, smoke, take drugs. There's nothing to throw up. Throwing up all morning. Drives to work. Can't press the accelerator. Gets to like 11 in the morning. So it started at 4. Doesn't call an ambulance. Calls my sister and says, I think something's wrong. My sister picks him up and she's like, I think you're having a stroke, Dad. And drove him to the John Faulkner, right? Like, I look at that.
Wild.
It's crazy, right? So one good thing is, like, my dad now, I think, you know, and as I said, I can have a very forward conversation with my father now. And I said to him, I said, I expect you here for another fucking 20 years now, bro. Like I said, like, we lost our mum. You got 4 grandkids. You might get more grandkids from somewhere. You might, there's no reason why you can't live long enough to see great grandkids, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, he's going to Pilates tomorrow morning. Goes to Pilates now. I think he enjoys the fact he's the only guy in the KX. No, I don't know which one he's just on Mount Road back in motion or whatever. He does personal training twice a week, goes to Pilates. I think it's also why he still goes. Hey, even you're in your 70s, mate, enjoy it.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, my brother goes, oh, but I think dad's flirting with all these young girls. I'm like, great.
Let him live his life.
But he's going, and then Fridays he goes and gets his beard done and his moustache done. He goes for lunch with the boys. He goes to the podiatrist every couple of weeks. He goes to massage therapist every couple of weeks. So, like, I look at that and go, okay, that's what he should have been doing that with my mum. He should have, but at least he's doing it now. And it's like, I look at my dad.
I know, but it's
sad, bro. Like, it's sad. And you know, I watched my father, and it's good that I got him to leave so I can have these conversations with you, because this is important stuff for people to realize. Watch my father at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. You know, we all had to fucking wear masks. My mum was dying, and there's my dad bargaining with God to give him more time with my mum. And I got angry with him. I said, you can't say that now. Like, you had time, you had 50 years, and you should have retired earlier. You should have sold a property and travelled. You know, you should have gone on a cruise for 6 months.
Though,
I know, but in hindsight, there he is at the deathbed, wishing he could have done that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't know we're going to have that conversation until we're actually at that point in our life, you know? It's sad that it takes a challenging life experience for us to realise, right?
Yeah.
So, look, what I'm glad is I got to witness that firsthand, face to face. So, like, I know now with me that I would want to make sure that, you know, if I got married one day, that I really made the most of that marriage. And, like, I'd want us to do lots of things. And, like, you know, in hindsight, I go, okay, do I need to retire with 20 houses, or can I retire with 10 houses and live a great life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I look at that and I go, okay, that's where the true beauty and romance of life belongs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need, for those that are listening to this that aren't in a relationship or aren't married, like, you don't need to be married or in a relationship to have that, you know, to have that romance with life.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I got out of, right? Like, so I think seeing death so up close and personal, you learn to fall in love with life, right? And it's like, fuck, it puts it all into perspective, bro. Especially when it's like, and when it's your mum, it's a bit of a, like, reminder for you that you're getting older.
Yeah.
So, like, I think like that. Like, you know, your mum's passed away. Okay, now I'm a father. Like, one day, the lion's going to be watching me in some bed passing away. I hope not, because I feel like if I died, I'd like to go out in a blaze of glory. Like, I don't want to be one of those people like laying in a bed.
Yeah.
Like, and when I saw that, I actually, there's, you know, there's a big controversial conversation, but you know, there's a lot of debate and discussion about, like, end of life plans now.
Yeah.
And I think after I saw my mum go through that. And it was funny, like, on the people at the Royal Women's did a great job, but, like, I would be sitting there, you know, nearly 24 hours a day, and I'd go out and speak to the doctors and the nurses, and I'm like, this is not right. Like, if a dog was dying like that, you'd put the dog down. They're like, you're preaching to the choir. Anyone on this floor agrees with you completely that this is inhumane, but the law hasn't caught up with it yet, right? Because we were fundamentally a Christian country.
Yeah. But you know, Stoicism was—it's in Stoic societies back in Greek mythology. Stoicism encouraged taking your own life.
Correct, to wrap it up, right? Correct.
You know, so, and it wasn't looked.
It wasn't frowned upon. No, it's the Christian influence, right? So, but Australia, you know, 50% of the census was, you know, claimed to be non. What do they call it? Agnostic or. When you don't believe, when you...
Secular?
Yeah, but, like, they're not religious anymore. 50%. Atheists, yeah. So 50% aren't religious anymore, right? And then the other 50%, some of them are Christian, some of them are Muslim, some are Buddhist.
The country's still based on Christian values.
Correct. Yeah, so, like, and we are evolving.
Otherwise, if we're not, then you're not gonna
correct. We are evolving, not that I vote Labor, but the Labor government is in Victoria, is pushing... it to be easier. It's still quite a process, but it was funny.
But it's funny because you can't, like, it's the thing is, you can't serve death to someone when they're in that state, because up until that point, they may have not believed in that themselves.
Correct, correct.
So you can't end that person.
Yeah. So do you know how they're going to make it work? Are you aware of it?
No, I don't.
So you got to get 3 sign-offs.
Okay.
So ironically, when we were at the hospital, my mum... Yeah, correct. So it's called an end-of-life plan,
yeah.
And you need to create it now. You can create it right now. That this is the parameter. When I get to this point,
okay.
Or if I'm incapacitated, if I'm in a car accident and I can't talk or I'm in a coma, don't let me stick around for more than a month. After a month, wrap me up, right?
Yeah.
And so forth. Then what you do is you go and get, so the first lady who did it, she fought cancer like 4 times. This was the 4th time and had gone through all her whole body. She had 3 daughters and it's the first lady in Victoria to do it. And she actually did it the week my mother was in hospital.
Oh, right.
So like, it was obviously a big conversation, right?
Yeah,
it was on the news.
Right. Yeah.
And she went to somewhere, I don't know, like Dalesford or something. And she, you know, had a nice lunch with her family. Then her 3 daughters and her went into the room. They administered some sort of a, you know, concoction as an injection.
Sounds good.
She went to sleep. That's it. Nice and calm. Not a 4th round of chemo. Lose all your hair again.
Burning skin. Yeah.
Daughters see their mother sick as a dog. They interviewed the woman. The woman did an interview before she did it. And it's like, that's a nice, beautiful journey for your transcending back into the universe, right? Back into the singularity. So like, I look at that and I go, that's a beautiful thing. And so like, I'm certainly one of the things that I will be doing in the next few years is building out an end of life plan for me.
Yeah.
Especially because dementia is often hereditary. And obviously my Uncle Bill had it and my mum had it. So it's on the Morello side and the Negro side.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting playing chess again. So yeah, just on my phone, but I should see if I can find a chess set after this.
On a lighter note, Darude or Tocker's Miracle?
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, Tocker's Miracle for sure.
Over Sandstorm?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was listening to it the other day. Literally, I was walking off the ferry and the sun was shining. Sun was shining, birds were chirping. 7:30 in the morning in Sydney, just come off the water. And I was like, I need a miracle, I need... You remember Metro? That was such a Metro underage. Yeah. Nah, it's good. It's
so
good questions, bro. I'm enjoying this.
So, moving forward, I think we've delved right into, you know, family and what's important to you. It's, you know, family, I can tell. Mm. I've known for the period of time that I've known you that it is so important to you. Mm. How close to you. And we've had these deep, dark discussions whilst you were living in Bondi away from family.
Mm.
And, you know, how has it made you stronger and where have you gone to you? Because you've dug deep. You've had, everyone's got their issues.
Mm.
And living in Bondi, you sold up that place and you had to dig deep to go. Get the next win.
Yeah.
So where are you at now? What's the plan? What's going on?
I think it's a great question because I think more than ever in my life I've realized that it's a journey, not a destination.
Okay.
I think I was trying to get to a destination. And like, I think the work with this, like it's a combination, listening to the Ram Dass, doing the Vedic meditation, going to do ceremony, working with a high performance psychologist, reading.
I think we're always at
100%. Bro, but when I'm with you, like I feel like I'm 16 again, bro, right? So like I enjoy the fact that you bring that out in me.
Yeah, right. Like, you're not like this all the time.
I think I'm like every morning, so I catch the ferry maybe 2-3 days a week.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny because Melburnians go, oh, I don't use public transport. It's a big thing. They go, I don't use public transport, right? Where in Sydney,
you have to.
One, you have to, but two, I get to take the ferry to work, bro. And it's such a beautiful experience. Like I meditate to and fro on a boat looking at water. It's very tranquil, very nourishing, it's very smooth. So I can add Matthew McConaughey. I do. And it's funny, like, you know, in my relationships, people, like whenever I've ever had romantic relationships, they've said, like, when, you know, you always go. But I said, you say that, but I travel a lot for business, right? So it's like, I travel on my own. So like I did it, I went to Auckland the other week for business.
Yep.
And so like when I'm on the plane, I meditate, I relax, I practice present moment awareness and so forth. When I travel, when I finish my gigs or whatever, I often will go back to the room and I'll just relax in the room. Like if I'm in Brisbane, for example, I don't need to go out.
Yeah.
Like I'm not thinking to myself, I get finish my gig, go back to the room and go, shit, I need to be at the Carlisle right now. Or if I'm in the Gold Coast, I need to be at Kelly Beach Club or something. Now, will I go to Kelly?
Like, sounds like you've been there before.
Will I go to Kelly Beach Club? 100%, right? Yeah. So like if somebody goes to me, do you want to go do something? But I'm not there having to do something, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the other thing is as well, I think I've given it a solid nudge. So like, do I slow down? Yes, I do. I get my energy from people though.
Yeah.
Like I did a podcast the other week with an ex-NRL footballer named Isaac Johns, Ice they call him. Really, really good guy, big following. He's got a brand, YTKR. You know the rules, YKT, you know the rules. YKTR, there we go. I always get it mixed up and I feel bad if he watches this. He's like, bro, you got my brand wrong, right? So he's got some really cool clothes if anyone wants to check it. YKTR. Yeah, because you know the rules. That's what it stands for. YKTR. So anyway, we were there and we were talking on his podcast and we got deep like this. Like we went definitely off script. He actually goes to me, you're the first person I am not prepared for.
Yeah, okay.
He goes, because mainly he normally has a lot of sports people on there. He doesn't generally have.
And they talk sports.
They talk sports, right? So like, correct. So he gets his football mates. Correct. So I was probably one of the only ones. Me and a couple of others he's had that aren't sports people. So we actually just went off on a tangent, a proper tangent, and it was a really good conversation around like, you know, consciousness and the journey of consciousness, not the destination, yeah. Right? And he said the same thing. He goes, everybody knows you. He goes, I go somewhere. He goes, I met you. You know, we got introduced by a mutual friend. Oh, by Danny Chia. You know Danny Chia? Yeah, Danny Chia's close mates with him, okay. Right? I think Danny used to sponsor him when he played footy, when Ice played footy. But so Danny introduced us. He goes, you two need to meet each other. And we trying to organize his diary, my diary, my business manager, Lucy. She's like, it's nearly impossible.
Still got Lucy.
Yeah. She's pregnant now, but having a baby. She's asked me to be the godfather. It will be my seventh goddaughter. That will be literally my seventh goddaughter. So he basically in that conversation, we really dove deep around the fact that like, it's a journey, bro. Like, and he goes, oh, you've always got so much energy. And I said, I get energy from people.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, if I'm not around people, yeah. But
this is what we had, what we spoke about before.
Yeah.
About the time that we give, yeah, to people, to tasks, yeah. To people that we meet.
Yeah.
Because you hang out with someone and 20 minutes in, you're like, fucking, it's been like a fucking day with them.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, I just want to get the fuck out of here.
Sometimes
that happens.
I'm very careful about who I spend my energy with.
And who you expose yourself to. My wife said to me, you know, you've got to protect your flame.
Mm.
You really do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that you have to.
Like, I went for dinner last night. They told you I went for dinner. And on the way out, I saw a guy that I used to play at Brunswick Zebras with, Daniel Barker. Great guy.
What position did you play?
Me? I was left mid.
Left mid,
yeah, because I can kick with my, I'm ambidextrous with my feet.
Get out.
I can kick with both legs, because nobody. So he we're at dinner, and I'm walking out, and Daniel Butker's like, Morello. I'm like, hey man, give him a hug, rada rada. Anyway, he had a guy with him that was just fucking rude. Like, he was drunk, and he was rude, right? And he was just being a smart ass to me. I'm like, I've never met this guy, ever. And normally I would just take it in my stride. I'm like, yeah. And you know what I did last night? I turned around and I said, mate, you're being very rude. I said, you're being very rude. And Daniel's like, nah, bro, he's all right. Just had a few too many drinks. I said, no, it's irrelevant,
matter.
Bro.
It doesn't matter.
I said, I stopped to say hello to you. I'm introducing you to my friends and vice versa. There's no place where he's allowed to be rude to me.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Like, so like now I think I've gotten to a point in my life, I wasn't staunching him. Well, I just tell people the truth.
100%.
Right? Like, there's a guy...
There's a way to tell it, of course. Mm. There's a way to still uphold yourself without having to, get to fucking violence.
Yeah, correct.
You know?
But it's interesting. As I've gotten older, and matured and grown, I feel like I don't need to pussyfoot around it anymore.
No,
right?
Yeah, 100%.
The other one's in business as well now. Like, people go to me, oh, remember Burris taught me this actually. It's a good little lesson. Burris goes, you need to be liked too much. Like, he goes, you love people pleasing. So, like, he goes, sometimes you need to go into a deal and know that you're going to leave unhappy,
yeah,
right? Because it's the right deal to be done. Rather than you have to always, oh, Morella, you want them to be all happy and chappy with you. And like, I've learned that now. Like, now I'm like, you know what? If it's not a good deal, I say to them, this is not a good deal. Like, I'd rather not make money out of this deal, and we say no to the deal. Not all business is good business, right? But I think when I was younger, I was always trying to fucking make the
magic
happen.
It is the art of the deal, isn't it?
Mm. It is the art of the deal. Been watching my online courses, have you? Didn't know you downloaded those. I would have just given you a coupon. You could have got it for free. Jeez, we have a good laugh, don't we? You know what? We should do another one with these with the chessboard.
True.
But you beat me.
No,
you shit me, bro. You always beat me. Correct. There we go. That's how I beat you last time. I got you drunk. I made you drink. Oh, what did we drink? Like three bottles of wine.
There's a lot of things involved.
Was that here? No, was that Bondi? Bondi. Okay.
Bondi.
I think we played here too.
Yeah,
with my ex, Sarah. Yeah. I told her that I was catching up with you. Yeah, she's a lovely girl.
Good chats, man.
Great chats, bro.
I'm happy to wrap it if you're happy to
wrap it. Yeah, great. It's been good. We got a bottle of whiskey to drink, and I got a reunion to go to, but yeah. So, bro, thank you very much for having me. It's a great honour.
Thank you.
Thanks, bro.
Good talking, bro. Love you.